Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, December 12, 2019. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Law Enforcement, Shop with Sheriff. Kids go Christmas shopping with sheriff's office members by Garrett Karsten, Decatur. A smile never left the face of 4-year-old Laura Bledsaw Wednesday night as she skipped down the Target store toy aisle. After seeing a toy princess car, she quickly reached it with one hand covered by her coat sleeve and placed it in a shopping cart. Another item caught Laura's eye in the next aisle over, a summer Barbie doll, and the final item she decided to get was an outfit of her favorite cartoon character, Minnie Mouse. All items were chosen with some assistance from her shopping partner that night, Kathy Burkham, an at-risk services employee of the Macon County Sheriff's Office. The pair was matched for the annual Shop with the Sheriff event, where money raised by the sheriff's office is given toward children to do a Christmas shopping spree for themselves and family members. "I actually got to do it when I was younger. I know that she's having a lot of fun," said Caitlin Bledsaw, the 4-year-old girl's mother, who pushed the cart as her daughter picked out Christmas gifts. She planned to get something for her brother as well. Shop with the Sheriff allowed 44 children to shop alongside a member of the Macon County Sheriff's Office for Christmas gifts. All divisions of the Sheriff's Office were able to participate, including Animal Control, Corrections, Emergency Management, Records, and Patrol. The children are selected after the office asks Macon County schools and nonprofit service providers for a list of children who would most benefit from the event. "I've watched this on the TV in the past, and I thought it was a great idea," said Burkham, who took part in the event for the first time this year. "Now that I'm a sheriff's office employee, I think it's a good way to be involved. I thought I would wrap presents, but it turned out to be a little different. It's great." Sergeant Scott Flannery said the 2-hour spree was started as an initiative to help kids see law enforcement in a more positive light. Some of the kids participating Wednesday night have had personal contact with deputies and continue a positive relationship. Some specifically requested kids who were involved in service calls or community events. "Let's face it, when law enforcement come to your house, it's usually not for a good thing," said Flannery. "It's our way of giving back to the community." The kids were allowed to spend $100 on any item in the store at 355 West Mound Road, either for themselves or family members. The money comes from donations. A golf tournament has also been held the past 4 years to raise money for the event. The event has a $5,000 budget every year, an amount they would like to see grow, along with having more staff come out and shop with the kids. Flannery said some officers even use personal break time to be there. This was the 12th consecutive year the Macon County Sheriff's Office Fraternal Order of Police Benevolent No. 144 has hosted Shop with the Sheriff. "We'd actually love to spend more. That's been a topic of discussion. But we're limited by the size of our department," he said. "We've got guys with huge hearts. We just don't have enough of us. There are families out there that struggle. It's just a little something we can give to make it a little better, and that's really what it is." To help, to donate toward the Shop with the Sheriff event, visit facebook.com/MaconCountyFOP144 or email MaconCountyFOP144@gmail.com for more information. Healthcare. Breast cancer drugs lauded. 2 show good results in advanced tumors. By Marilyn Marchione, Associated Press, San Antonio. Doctors on Wednesday reported unusually good results from tests of 2 experimental drugs in women with an aggressive form of breast cancer that had spread widely and resisted many previous treatments. One drug showed particular ability to reach tumors in the brain, which are notoriously tough to treat. The other pairs a sort of homing device for cancer cells with a payload of chemotherapy that's released when it reaches its target. It's a guided missile. It's able to bring the chemotherapy directly to the cancer cell, said the study leader, Dr. Ian Kropp of the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. Results were disclosed at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium and in the New England Journal of Medicine. From 15 to 20% of breast cancers are HER2 positive. They have too much of a protein called HER2 on their cell surfaces, driven by an overactive gene that promotes cancer growth. Kropp led a study of 253 such women to test the guided missile drug called T-DXd, given as an infusion every 3 weeks. These women had tried on average six previous treatments before the experimental drug. Different doses were tested, and 184 women got what turned out to be the best one. Among those women, 61% saw their tumors shrink at least 30%. In 6% of them, no signs of cancer were seen in at least two follow-up scans. Although the experimental drug was not tested against others, the response rate is 3 to 4 times better than what's usually seen in this situation, Kropp said. The median time until cancer worsened was 16 months, and to see anything hold such serious cancers at bay for more than a year is exciting, he said. Side effects were substantial, though. About 60% of women had low blood counts, nausea, anemia, or fatigue, and 15% stopped treatment because of them. Most serious, 25 developed lung inflammation, and 4 died of it. This is a rare side effect with other drugs for this type of cancer, but it was much more common with the experimental drug. Doctors can watch patients closely and give anti-inflammatory medicines if it occurs, Kropp said. Because these cancers generally prove fatal, the drug is still beneficial for most patients, he said. An independent expert, Dr. Jennifer Litton of the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, said it may be possible to give patients preventative anti-inflammatory medicines. It's worth the risk because the drug's benefit is so great, she said. The study was sponsored by the drug's developers, Daiichi Sankyo Inc. and AstraZeneca, and they are seeking approval for the medicine in the U.S., Japan, and Europe. Kropp consults for the companies. Dana-Farber's Dr. Eric Weiner helped lead a study of the other experimental medicine, tucatinib, from Seattle Genetics. It's a drug that's particularly able to get into the brain, he said, and half of the 612 participants had cancer that had spread there. These patients had nothing that worked, and they're often excluded from tests of new drugs because their outlook is so poor, Litton said. All were given usual treatments, Herceptin and the chemo drug Zoloda, plus tucatinib or dummy pills. After 2 years, 45% of those on tucatinib were alive, versus 27% of the others. Among the women whose cancer had spread to the brain, 25% were alive with no worsening of those tumors a year later. None of the women in the comparison group achieved that. Diarrhea, fatigue, nausea, and some liver side effects were a little more common with tucatinib. About 6% of the tucatinib group stopped treatment because of the side effects, versus 3% of the other. Agriculture, Severe Floods, New Normal for Farmers, by Tammy Weber and Josh Funk, Associated Press, Crescent, Iowa. Frogs, carp, and bugs thrived all summer in murky floodwaters where Gene Walter should have planted corn and soybeans. Last year's ruined crop spilled from metal storage bins that burst 9 months ago when the Missouri River surged between two levees near his southwest Iowa farm. Like many in the water-weary Midwest, Walter doesn't know if climate change was responsible for the second major flood in 9 years, or the increasingly frequent torrential rains that dump more water in an hour than he used to see in days. Even so, we kind of feel like it's the new normal, said Walter, who lost 46,000 bushels of corn and soybeans. You can't rely on anything. You can't build anything. You can't do future planning. The uncertainty is the thing that is really bad. This year's devastating losses are forcing tough decisions about the future of farming in America's floodplains, even among those skeptical of climate change and humans' role in it. Farmers who lost billions of dollars in grain, livestock, equipment structures, and unplanted crops are wondering whether they should, or can, return to the fertile bottomlands next year. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers must determine how many damaged levees can be rebuilt, but says it won't be all of them. More than 50 levees were breached on the Missouri River alone, taking thousands of acres out of production. And with the ground still soggy heading into winter, Experts say the stage is set for more flooding next spring. A lot of this ground won't be put back into production, said Brett Adams, a Peru, Nebraska farmer, who saw 2,000 acres, 80% of his land, submerged in up to 12 feet of water. I've seen it firsthand up and down the river. Land is so tore up from flooding that some of it is completely ruined. Adams lost over 100,000 bushels of corn and $500,000 in potential income after six storage bins burst. But he bristles when people ask why he farms in an area that could flood. "Because it never flooded before," Adams tells them, noting that a levee built in 1950 kept his farm dry during major floods in 1993 and 2011. It's very difficult to directly tie this year's flooding, or any single weather event, to climate change. But the flooding comes as we're seeing big rain and even bigger snows that are consistent with what we'll see in a warming world, because a warmer atmosphere delivers more water to storm systems, said National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Climate Monitoring Chief Deke Arndt. The number of heavy rain events has increased throughout much of the U.S., including the Midwest, where the days with at least 1 inch of rain averaged 13% higher from 2009 to 2018 than the long-term average dating to 1950, according to NOAA. In Missouri, the number of annual 4-inch or greater rainfalls was 58% higher than the long-term average. In Iowa, the increase was 31%, and in Nebraska, it was 23%. There will also be more severe droughts, experts say, while rains will be more intense, with more water falling in a shorter period. What's more, the greatest increase in rainfall is occurring in the fall, when farmers are trying to harvest. The unpredictability ends up being really bad news for farms, said Jeffrey S. Dukes, an ecologist who directs the Climate Change Research Center at Purdue University. Heavy rains and flooding kept farmers from their fields in more than a dozen states this year, the wettest on record through October in the contiguous U.S., and breached levees along major waterways that included the Arkansas and Mississippi rivers. On the Missouri, the disaster unfolded after a blizzard was followed by heavy rain that fell on the snow and frozen ground. Most of the runoff came from tributaries without levees or dams, so the Army Corps had no way to slow the surge and little time to warn farmers. It just completely overwhelmed the levees downstream, said Matthew Krajewski, chief of the Readiness Branch in the Corps' Omaha district. Experts say heavy rain in 2018 set the stage for the floods because the soil was saturated as winter started. Now, the situation is worse than this time last year, because heavy rain fell all summer and into the fall, preventing the soil from drying out, said Kevin Lowe, a hydrologist at the Missouri Basin River Forecast Center. The setup is extremely bad, he said, noting most levees have not been repaired. There's nothing we can do but watch and wait. Some areas along the Missouri were above flood stage more than 270 consecutive days, according to hydrologist David Pearson at the National Weather Service's Missouri Basin River Forecast Center. Julia Schaff believes it's the Army Corps' job to protect farmland like his, though he concedes there's a legitimate question whether farmers should remove structures from floodplains. The levees and dams kind of gave us a false sense of security, said Schaff, whose farms near Randolph, Iowa were flooded this year. But the Corps says its priority is to protect people and infrastructure such as highways, railroads, and towns, not agricultural land. The agency is conducting cost-benefit assessments to determine which levees can and should be rebuilt. There is a good chance that it won't be all of them, said the Corps' Krajewski, noting that funding is limited. Jesse White Tumblers, White, 60 years of doing right by kids. Secretary of State also formed Decatur Power Tumblers, by Darcel Rocket, Chicago Tribune. Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White has lived a life. Stepping into his Thompson Center office in Chicago reveals just that, and he jokes that if you venture to Springfield, there are three sites to see. Two feature Lincoln, the other is his office. During his 85 years, White served in the military, played for the Chicago Cubs, was a member of the Illinois House of Representatives for 16 years, and was the recorder of deeds of Cook County for 6 years. He has been Secretary of State since 1999. But it was his mentoring of young people for a gym show that led to his Chicago namesake, the Jesse White Tumblers. White recalls teaching children how to tumble, wrestle, and use gymnastics equipment at Rockwell Gardens Fieldhouse during the off-season from the Cubs. After 2 months, the participants showed off their skills to the community. I told the parents that was my first and last show, and they said, "You know, our kids are staying away from gangs and negative aspects just to be with you," White said. I said, "Okay, I'll try one more year." It kept going, and every year I would say, "This is it." Now it's 59 years later. The Jesse White Tumblers group turned 60 this month, and will celebrate 60 years of doing right by kids and giving them a wholesome experience at a gala Thursday evening, where White says guests will see how the tumblers help our young people grow tall and strong. White also formed the Decatur Power Tumblers, which is based on the Jesse White Tumblers. He helped volunteers Joyce and Jack Keller get the group started and is in regular contact with them to keep it going. The group regularly performs at various public events in the city, including Decatur Celebration. When you walk into the Jesse White Park and Community Center on a weekday, you see toddlers with their parents coming in for gym time. The parents sit while the kids bounce around. White greets the children and takes time for selfies with parents. The site is also a practice space for the tumblers. The space, built in 2014, is where White says he wants kids to be better human beings and use their time in a positive way. That includes trying out for a spot on the tumbling team. Tryouts are typically held in September, training starts in October, and when the tumblers' skills are refined, graduation is in May, Coach McGee said. To join the team, tumblers must be leafless, pipeless, and smokeless, read, no drugs, and able to execute a forward roll, backward roll, round-off flip, and cartwheel during their tryout. Man fails to overturn sex assault verdicts by Tony Reed, Decatur. A bid by Mark A. Marquis to overturn his sexual assault convictions or win a new trial was denied at a Macon County Circuit Court hearing Wednesday. Judge Eric Hubbard made the rulings before scheduling a sentencing hearing for January 28th. Marquis, 68, faces anything from probation to spending up to 7 years in jail after a jury trial convicted him October 23rd on 2 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse involving 2 boys younger than 10. The same jury had also acquitted the Decatur man of 3 additional counts of predatory criminal sexual assault after the 3-day trial. Arguing before the judge Wednesday, defense counsel Steve Jones said the jury might have found Marquis innocent of all charges if they had been allowed to hear more information about his lack of sexual desire. Jones said the court erred in not allowing testimony from Marquis's wife, who could have convinced the jury her husband, who sat in court in a wheelchair, had lost his sex drive, especially after suffering a stroke. Based on her observations, he was incapable of having sex or even initiating sexual relations between her and him, Jones said. He said the jury, which was hung at one point in its deliberations, might have been swayed by the wife's views. I think they should have been allowed to hear her testimony. I think it's relevant, and I think it's exactly on point, Jones added. Additionally, he argued that the date range given for the sexual assaults was too vague to allow for an effective defense. Of the boys involved, one now in his 20s, the other a teenager, one group of offenses was stated as occurring between August 2009 and June 2011, and another between April 2005 and April 2009. The range of dates set forth in the information was so broad that the defense was incapable of providing or preparing an adequate defense, said Jones. But the judge had agreed with the counter-arguments of Assistant State's Attorney Kate Kurtz. Dealing with the sex issue, she said the testimony from the spouse was rightly excluded because it was irrelevant to the charges in front of the court. And the defendant himself was allowed to testify that he didn't have sexual desires, that he couldn't get an erection, she added, arguing that the jury got to hear all about his lack of libido. As for the date change of the charges, the date range of the charges, Kurtz said the prosecution doesn't have to cite precise dates under the law, but can list a date range, especially in child sex cases. A sweet tradition. 5,500 treats make annual cookie party a semester-ending hit. By Donette Beckett, Decatur. The smell of sugar and butter lured Millikan University students, faculty, and visitors to the University Commons third floor for the 86th annual cookie party on Wednesday afternoon. Some students were able to grab a few cookies on their way to another class, while others relaxed and enjoyed music, green Grinch punch, and a choice of about 5,500 cookies. Molly Berry, director of campus life, worked with a cookie party committee to create the two-hour event, which is a long-beloved tradition on campus. The volunteer schedule, the musical schedule, all of these things make the event run smooth, she said. It's just an end-of-the-semester celebration. Millikan exams are scheduled for next week, so we are happy to see people for a few minutes or 2 hours, Berry said. The cookies are collected through donations. The committee begins requesting the treats in October among the Millikan staff. Monetary donations are equally appreciated. As a senior, Gabby Correa has made the cookie party an important stop during her academic career. It's a tradition, she said. The annual routine is quite simple. You come in and eat cookies, said Naomi Klingbeil, a senior. Correa, Klingbeil, and several of their friends arrived early to be among the first to gather their favorite cookies. They were efficient, senior Sydney Stower said about their wait before the doors opened, so it was a quick time. Throughout their years at Millikan, the group of students have decided on the favorites, but they have a lot of fun designs this year, said Megan Whitlock. Along with the massive amounts of cookies, the students said they were impressed with the staff and administration that joined them for the party. The president and the provost and a ton of people that work here greeted us at the front, said Bailey Baxter. You see all of the important people of Millikan. Donning a Santa hat on top of his usual blue Millikan baseball cap, University President Patrick White greeted the students as they entered the party. It is a time right when things are very busy and people are worried about finals and end-of-the-year papers, he said. It's just time to take a small time out, relax with some friends, and eat some sugar. White's wife, Chris, is a nurse and dressed as his elf for the day. She stood with him throughout the afternoon, explaining to the students the importance of these parties. I tell them that glucose helps brain functions, Chris White said. Sugar will help them get through a 2 o'clock paper write. Pritzker gives $5 million to committee backing his income tax plan. By Jamie Monks, Chicago Tribune, Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker has given $5 million to a ballot initiative committee backing a graduated rate income tax, the cornerstone of his agenda, as both sides of the issue gear up for an expensive and contentious battle in 2020. The Illinois General Assembly this spring approved legislation that will ask voters next November whether the Illinois Constitution should be amended to allow for a graduated rate income tax based on the size of income, repealing the current flat-rate income tax collection system. The Vote Yes for Fairness Committee was formed in August, and the deep-pocketed Democratic governor's $5 million contribution is the only money in its account to date. The committee is chaired by Quentin Fulks, Pritzker's former deputy campaign manager. The proposed amendment to the 1970 Illinois Constitution would require approval by 60% of those who vote on the issue, or a majority of those who vote in the election, to be adopted. Pritzker's pitch for the graduated income tax plan has emphasized that only a small percentage of Illinois residents, the state's wealthiest, would pay more if voters approve the constitutional change in November. Under the rates laid out in legislation the General Assembly approved earlier this year, taxpayers who earn more than $250,000 annually would see higher rates. Pritzker has contended his graduated income tax plan would generate $3.4 billion in new revenue. His predecessor, wealthy Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, championed an effort to amend the state constitution to take the power to draw legislative maps out of the hands of lawmakers. However, Rauner didn't give any money directly to support Independent Maps, the group that backed a 2016 referendum, which the Illinois Supreme Court blocked from the ballot. A ballot initiative committee named Vote No on the Blank Check Amendment was created earlier this year to oppose the graduated rate income tax constitutional amendment. As of September 30th, the group's bankroll was empty, according to records. The Vote No group was created by Greg Bays, former president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. The group's logo features the silhouette of Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan and a broken pen. Decatur to get $5.9 million loan for sewer work from EPA. Herald and Review, Decatur. The city of Decatur will receive a $5.9 million loan from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency for sewer repairs, officials announced Wednesday. In a statement, the state agency said the low-interest loan would be provided by its state revolving fund, which provides funding for wastewater, stormwater, and drinking water projects. The city also qualifies to have $886,671.50 of the loan amount forgiven by the state. City Manager Scott Wrighton said the agreement maximizes the benefit for residents. The city has chosen to proactively invest in our infrastructure to reduce long-term maintenance costs and minimize the disruptive impacts of reactionary fixes necessary to provide services to our residents and businesses, Wrighton said in a statement. This program will inevitably provide better quality of life for our residents through reduced flooding and sewer backups throughout our service area. About 12,000 feet of sewer repairs will feature a method called cured-in-place pipe, which allows the sewers to be lined without digging a trench. The city has used the method for other critical sewer repairs in recent years. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, in 2012, identified fixes needed to Decatur's aging sewer system, beginning several years of negotiations with city officials. The federal agency ultimately required a detailed study of the sewer system that took place in 2016. Results showed an estimated $70 million in needed repairs. Even before that, city officials have long identified sewer infrastructure needs, having crafted a sanitary sewer master plan in 2010 and a storm water master plan in 2009. The city has tackled several major sewer rehabilitation projects in the last decade as part of those plans. Police: smashed windows leave $1,000 in damage, Decatur. Police are investigating a criminal damage case after five windows valued at $1,000 were smashed in a Decatur home. Decatur Police Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said the 67-year-old resident of the Milliken Place house told police the windows were last seen undamaged at 12:30 a.m. Tuesday. He found them broken at 9 a.m. later the same day. The damage was consistent with rocks being thrown at the windows, said Copeland. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, December 12, 2019. Please stay tuned.